All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to American Vindicta. I'm finally back. I had about a week, maybe a week and a half hiatus there. So, after action review, let's talk about it. Over the weekend, from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we had this last training class. This class was about shooting, moving, and communicating. And as everyone who showed up to this class, more so on the moving and communicating. So what was really cool that we were able to do this time is we've really, really, I would say, honed down how we want the shoot house to be employed, how we think it helps the student the best, and how it becomes something that is really more challenging for us. Especially as the instructor cadre. So with this this go around, what we threw at the students with the scenarios was pretty entertaining. It was really a lot of the basic stuff that we always teach. We got to teach how to walk, run, jog, stand up, kneel, lay down on the ground, crawl on the ground, walk left, walk right, walk diagonally. All these things with a firearm. Now, that may seem monotonous. Most of you can say, well, I can walk. Well, I put a gun in your hand, and then you'll find out pretty quick you don't really know what to do and how to manipulate your body, especially if we're talking about wearing body armor. When we're wearing body armor, we want the front paired up, looking straight at the threat, or at least the area of where the threat was. And so, you know, this is one of the things that we try to reinforce with people. We also always suggest bring your gear, your helmets, your vests, your gun belt, your rifle, your slings. Bring everything you think you're going to ever wear, ever carry, that you want to test out. Bring it to us and let us see it. Let us test you in it. That's really what we do, is we test and evaluate people. So first day, Thursday, it was all the, you know, same basic stuff that we always do. So that's the shoot, move, communicate, teaching the basic weapons fundamentals. And from there, we move on to basic tactics. Basic tactics is showing you how to work a center-fed room. These are all doorways, center-fed room, a corner-fed room, then working the off-angle shoots from door frames, learning how to keep distance as your friend. For any of you who are listening, you just came back from that class, or you've been to any of the classes, if you want to add in some of the things that you learned from our class so far, please, please let everybody know in the comments below. But using that off angle, we want to use as much distance in a house as reasonably possible. Situation always dictates. But if you can, you want to keep yourself behind cover, not out exposed in the open. You know, even for me, that in the world of military and law enforcement, I have kind of retracted my way of thinking, because when we talk about this one-man CQB, this one-man close quarters battle, one man clearing a house, clearing a hallway, clearing a stairway, securing the outside perimeter of a home, securing an outbuilding outside like a shed in the back, you know, most likely it's just you. Most likely you don't have anyone else to do this with you. You got no backup. No backups coming until the cops arrive, and you better pray to God that they do come, and that they do come quickly. You are the first responder. This is one of the things that I'm trying to put in people's heads. As someone who took 10 years of being a first responder, honestly, the victim, the first person on scene, is the victim, and they are the first responder. So moving on from there, one of the things that I'll have to say is that the basics of these tactics are the same across the board. From basic infantryman school, like what we're trained in the Army, and then also in the Marine Corps where I'm from, moving forward into your really specialized tasks, style teams like the Navy SEALs, the Army Rangers. From there, you got the SF units and Delta and DevGru guys, like our brother Billy. So these guys are a finely honed team because of thousands of reps and thousands of hours of, you know, left side clear, right side clear, making a button hook or a cross, clearing out stairwells, hallways, L-shape hallways, T-shape hallways. And it's because they get the footwork down so much, and because they get to have shoot houses where they can go in there and they can actually shoot at targets against the wall. These houses are shoot houses built to be shot in. Ours is an airsoft, so a not a kinetic projectile, I guess you would say. It is not bullet resistant. But what they get over the average civilian is that is their job. They're not working a 9-to-5 where they got to fight traffic, fight the kids and all this other stuff just to go and, you know, go to work and do a little bit of training once or twice a year. That's all these guys do. That's all I did. All I did was train, deploy, train, deploy, train, deploy. And then when I went into law enforcement, I'll tell you this much. And for any of you guys out there that are law enforcement or your prior military and then you turn to law enforcement, if you agree with me on this statement, please let me know. But I learned 1,000 times more about tactics and a different approach to tactics as a law enforcement officer than I ever did in the military. Jamie Walden showed up this time for Saturday and Sunday for the training course. He came and was a part of it, stepped in a little bit, taught some things and spoke about some stuff and helped out with some of the scenarios. So, you know, praise God that we had Jamie there. That was awesome. But even Jamie will tell you that what we did in Iraq was much less complicated compared to what we're having to do here in the United States. In Iraq, we have rules of engagement, and if you mess around, you find out. In Iraq, you know, if I wave a little flag at you in my convoy, try to get your vehicle to stop, and you don't stop, well, I'm going to, quote, skip rounds off the hood of the car, and we all know that that's not how science works. Those rounds skip and go straight into the windshield. You can't do that exactly here in America and get away with it, not at least more than twice. So we have this unique thing here in America that are laws. And the thing about those laws is they can and will be used against you, just like anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Apparently, you do not have a right to a speedy trial anymore. You're being judged by your peers is highly questionable of who is considered to be a peer of yours now. And there's a lot of bias, especially if you're a Christian, especially if you're law enforcement, if you're a Christian, if you're a Second Amendment guy, if you're a constitutionalist, all these things are really held against you now. You know, if you're a rainbow haired amphibian, the world's your oyster. But for all of us good old boy Americans, we kind of got to fight for everything we got now. And that fight comes. And that fight's going to get worse. Policing and tactics, unlike combat, where I'm not going to say we ran through every house because we didn't. We did slow surreptitious searches because things were getting the ambush were getting more complicated. IEDs and stairways, doorways were being locked in with explosives. They would, you know, do their best if they could to blow you up inside of a house. So that was a bit different. That might be more of an Iraq thing, more of a combat related thing, but not necessarily. I mean, I could play you a video of what just happened recently in Arlington, Virginia, where a house exploded as law enforcement went to serve a search warrant. Very reminiscent to tactics from Iraq. So here in America, when it comes to tactics, we go slow, we go low. You have rights, or at least you're supposed to. So, you know, you can't just kick people in the face and drag them out by the hair like we used to in Iraq. That's not exactly frowned upon in certain places in America. But if you're wearing the blue and you're wearing the badge, it makes you look bad for doing that. So I learned how to be very slow and meticulous, how to look for anything and everything. Everything is always evidence, right? Even if you're not there to officially look at it, you're still looking at it. So I've learned to kind of blend three different ways now of doing tactics in CQB. I learned first from the Marine Corps, you know, hard cuts into those deep corners, crossing, button hooking, you know, looking for a guy in a room or a target on the wall. And typically you get taught, you know, as soon as you go in there, tell them hands up if you speak the language. If they don't, they make any movements at all, you kill them. Then we got law enforcement where, you know, still have a lot of leeway to do a lot of things with the gun. You walk inside, announce yourself as police, police, police. Anybody in here? And then if someone appears, hands up, don't move, don't reach for anything. Let me see your hands. Is there anyone else in the house? Do you got any weapons on you? Do you know this person? May not be the right person that we're looking for. And now we have to deal with that person. We have to put them in a position of disadvantage while keeping ourselves in a position of dominance. So I may ask that person to, like, if I'm looking in a, let's just use my house. If I'm looking in the great room and I look down the hallway and someone comes out of a bedroom, I'm going to have that person come to me. I'm going to call them, come to me, walk towards the sound of my voice, walk towards the sound of my voice. Keep your hands on top of your head. Don't move. And then when they get to me, I'll decide what I want to do with them. You know, I may tell them, grab your shirt, keep your right hand on your head, take your left hand, grab your shirt, pull it up so I can see around your waistband. Spin slowly in a circle. Why am I doing that? The reason why I do that is because people hold weapons in their hands. Hands are what kill people. We're not all Chuck Norris. Hands are what kill people. Hands are what carry weapons. And then from there, weapons are typically carried around the waist, either in the waist side of the pockets of a jacket or a coat, or within the actual waistline, within the belt line. So from there, I'd just put them on the ground, put handcuffs on them, and then, you know, detain them, arrest them, whatever I need to do to move through the rest of the house. So that was me in law enforcement. Me now as a civilian. The first thing I told everybody when we started doing this was, do you have to go into that house? And at first, I kind of confused people. Do you need to go in the house? If it's your house and nobody's in there, doors wide open when you come home, do you have to go inside that house? Do you need to assume the risk that somebody made a breaking and entering and are still in that house ready to ambush you? And you are going to assume that risk the moment you cross the threshold of that front door, back door, whatever door it is, it may be open in this hypothetical situation. The moment you walk into that house, you have to re-dominate your house. You have to re-own it. Because now somebody's in there and they've owned it until you come back in. They could be setting themselves up in a corner, setting themselves up behind the couch, behind the walls, behind a stairwell, peeping out of a door. You got to be slow, methodical. As we used to say, fast on the sights, slow on the trigger. So my gun, here's my rear sight. This is my front sight. So as my gun is looking, my eyes look where my gun looks. My eyes look where my gun looks. As soon as something comes within my field of view, my sights are on. I'm looking, and I'm starting to already depress that trigger. I'm setting the trigger for the shot. Now, my finger with a pistol, my finger is the safety. So if you walk straight into a house with your finger straightened on the trigger, I mean, finger not straightened off the trigger, if your finger's resting on that trigger, you're squeezing it back, ready to make that shot, and then you trip, and then you bump into something, then a kid jumps out, dog comes out, whatever, goats come out of the living room, who cares? We occasionally have goats in the living room. You may have a sympathetic reaction and fire your pistol too soon, which can be either giving away your position or striking someone that did not need to be shot. So what the students learned this weekend was CQB, room clearing, is a thinking man's game. First off, do I have to go inside this house? No, that option is totally on you. If I want to sit outside of my vehicle, call the police, and be a well-armed, trained observer, I would let them know, hello, police, this is me. I'm at this location. I am wearing these color clothings. I'm about this tall. This is what my features are. Got a beard, long hair, blue shirt on, pants on, and I'm sitting in a jacked up Excursion. So as soon as you come here, you'll know that's me. I'll probably still be on the phone with you just to make sure law enforcement knows it's me, unless you can patch me into that officer, which most likely they won't patch you into that officer, but there's a chance. So from there, I'm just going to observe my house. I'm going to be looking at the doorway, at the windows. I'm going to be looking to see if people are moving back and forth. I may get out of my vehicle. I may strafe the side of my house using those angles, keeping as much distance away from me and this house as possible. Now, you'll learn in CQB and you'll learn in general in combat that distance is your friend. If I've got a problem with a guy, and the only way to settle that problem is with a gun, I promise you, you can bet me on it, that bullet is going to reach that problem before you do. You don't have to close the distance like every single person has done that has been through any scenario we have ever put on. They get sucked into the situation. They get way too close, and they either get tackled, their pistol grab, leg grab, hand grab. And it's because we naturally want conflict and we want to be right there for it. And we think the best way to handle these problems is to get right in front of somebody. If I get really close to you with my gun, that'll really show you that I mean business. I mean, as long as you actually shoot your pistol, your firearm, as long as you actually go out and actively participate in the act of training, which is not to shoot your gun every Christmas to bag the one deer a year and to, you know, shoot it randomly off into a berm for 4th of July. If you're actually training, you should be able to hit somebody at 25 feet. You should be able to hit somebody at 30, 40 feet. We were at my buddy Justin's. Justin is our assistant instructor. As some of you have come to know, Uncle Charlie is what he's called. That is his meth head alter ego that he assumes when he's playing the bad guy inside the house. We were out at his house Monday, and you know, and we're out there shooting pistols, and I showed him and Jamie Walden how you can one-handed. And if anyone ever wants to be demonstrated this when you come into the courses, just let me know how you can one hand fire a pistol the old school way with the with your shoulder locked back, your chest out. As long as you take that thumb and press it real high while holding your pistol, it'll steady your pistol. And I was hitting steel at 50 yards, left-handed, not even right-handed, left-handed. There's an art to shooting. There's a science to shooting based off your body. You got to get out and you got to learn it. And you got to learn what you can do and what you can't do. And the things you're not good at, you got to practice them a tremendous amount. So let's go back to the scenario. I segued way off. Police get there. I'm going to identify myself. Would I be holding a pistol or a rifle in my hand? No. Not when law enforcement arrives, because the last thing I want is their guns pointed at me, because that's what I would do to you. I would, whoever's got the gun is getting my gun pointed at them, especially if I get a told that it's a breaking and entering and the subject or suspect is possibly still on the premises. So let them know, hey, this is me. This is my house. I just came home. Front door's unlocked. Front door's open. I always lock up my house. So I didn't even go up there to see if someone kicked in the door or not. I just sat right here, called you guys, and waited. That, as long as you don't get shot at through your house, is a perfectly reasonable way to handle that situation. Because if you don't do that, if you go beyond, if you don't have training, if you don't know how to use your corners, if you don't fire your firearm, if you don't know how to keep your gun up in your face, in your sights, and if you are hesitant on pulling the trigger, not only that, but if not just hesitant, but if you are way too eager, if you walk through that house too fast, like we had a young lady do this past weekend, and you keep your finger on the trigger. She never did that. She just walked too fast. I think she really wanted to just get, I think she just wanted to get Uncle Charlie. But if you do the wrong things because you're not trained, you rush through it, you're slapping the trigger. Some of you guys found out this weekend when we worked the barricade drill, when we were using live firearms. If you slap the trigger, you are not going to hit the target, even if it's 25 feet in front of you and you're shooting an AR. If you yank on that gun, you're going to throw off that round as it comes out the barrel, and more especially with a pistol. So we learned a lot of things. We learned this weekend what our initial capabilities were coming to the training. And then the most, for me and Justin, the proudest thing that we can be told is that we came here not confident or not very confident in our skills, and we left here being very confident. So that for me is a win. Anytime someone says, hey, I am very confident in what I'm doing now. Perfect. Good. We did something right. The scenarios as we put them on, they evolve every day to become more complicated and more complicated. And Justin, he's our scenario. He's our role player. He is really what dictates the scenario. I set up the scenario. I establish the bounds of the scenario. Justin then throws in anything that he can think of to throw you off. And there are a few, I think everybody this weekend and anyone else who's come to the course so far understands that if I were to just put you through something like what the military does and a lot of law enforcement does and a lot of civilian classes do, if I put you in a shoot house and then I just put a paper target on the wall and you're cutting corners, you're pieing the doorway, keeping distance, all that cool stuff, engaging from outside of thresholds. If the only stimulus you ever get to work off of is a paper target, you're not getting the full picture of reality. I'm not saying don't seek those guys out, and I'm not saying don't take their training. You need to. live firearms inside of a shoot house is a tremendous, tremendous thing to train on, because the booming echo of some of you guys' choice firearms are going to surprise you. But for us, because we work upon scenarios and role players using the human target, not only are you always aiming at a person in any different direction. Sometimes Justin is bladed. You can only hit him from the side. Sometimes he's running at you. Sometimes he's running backwards away from you. Sometimes he's crab crawling on the ground like a freaking weirdo. Sometimes he's laying on the ground. Sometimes he's rolling on the ground, rolling towards you. He does anything to throw you off. And it's not like I haven't seen most of that, especially in law enforcement, especially dealing with people that have strung out on drugs, mental deficiencies, you know, people that are just crazy. Some people just do the absolute most craziest thing you'd never think you'd expect someone to do, because they saw it in a movie one time and they thought it worked. I'm telling you that if you use the basics of this training, your availability to walk into that house and then to walk back out of that house, at least in one piece, has tremendously increased. Tremendously. Now, real life is real life. Stuff happens. People get shot. People get shot in the face quite a bit. People get shot and they bleed out. One of the things that we covered this weekend also is just the basics of tourniquets. Tourniquets and pressure bandages. If you don't have a medical kit, I would tell you to go to like North American Rescue, I think that's who it is, and go and buy a medical kit. You heard me say a company, not Amazon. North American Rescue. Any of these tactical companies, and buy a kit that they assemble. You need a good tourniquet and buy from an actual company. A CAT tourniquet is what I suggest people have, or a SWAT-T tourniquet. And you want to train on that. You can go to stopthebleed.org or .gov. It's something that DHS and FEMA put on. Teaches you how to control bleeding through this whole big PowerPoint. Controlling bleeding, applying tourniquets, applying pressure. Seek out that training. If it costs you $100 to $180 in your area to seek out professional medical training just for a day or two, pay the guy, seek it out, and consume everything that you can like a buffet. I'm telling you, you have to be so well-rounded for what is coming. Look, guys like me, over the weekend, I'll tell you a story. Over that weekend, dragging the trailer from Texas all the way to Eastern Tennessee, beat the snot out of my truck. My truck just doesn't like pulling trailers. I don't know. So, As soon as I get there, I have to. Justin's got a buddy of his who's a mechanic. Great dude. I mean, this guy was done fixing my truck within one magazine of shooting at Justin's property, shooting on his range. And so he fixed my truck. Lickety split. Probably $300-$400 cheaper than going to any of these freaking places around here. And, you know, he's like, man, I don't really have many skills except this. I'm like, do you understand? You just accomplished something. You looked in my truck, you moved a few things around, and you instantly knew what needed to be replaced. You went and got the parts, came back, and within like 10 minutes, it was all done. I'd be here for probably 2 weeks looking on Amazon, looking on freaking YouTube, calling buddies of mine, anything not to go to the dang diesel mechanic shop, because I want to learn for one thing. And I'm tired of getting raked over the coals for prices. I told him, man, what a skill that you have. What a skill. It was great. We were able to pray over I was able to pray over him. And you know, the new ambitions and job that he's starting, working for himself. So, you know, David, I hope everything goes good for you, man. But it was cool because, you know, I told him, like, look, dude, I shot guns my entire life. I've dealt with people my entire life, and I've always had someone deal with the vehicles. So, but dude, think about this. When everything goes bad, we need so many more logistics guys. We need so many more mechanics and doctors. Don't really need lawyers. We need a lot of people that are the guys that keep the kingdom together more than we need the guys that are out there shooting at people. We need so much more than just an army of defenders. You got to have everybody involved. And I said, dude, when things get bad, man, you know, we're going to rely on guys like you to keep our vehicles up and going, or generators, if it's a diesel generator, because you knew how to work on one. I said, so don't ever sell yourself short. Whatever you do out there, don't sell yourself short unless you're a lawyer. And then, you know, you probably want to learn what a shovel is. I'm super hard on lawyers. God loves you. I love you too. So the last scenario that we did was probably our funnest scenario we've done so far. We were able to, in the honor of our brother Bob Griswold, his son Josh, who now runs Ready Made Resources, gave us a entire case of military grade smoke grenades. So they'll pump out about 1 million square cubic feet worth of smoke. Well, in about 2 hours, I popped 24 of those, if I'm correct. I mean, it looked like a battle zone. We smoked out the Smoky Mountains. It was hilarious. But we had fires going. We had Justin's truck parked on the side of the road, on the side of the house, actually, with a hazard beam. So you got this heavy, dense smog. And then you got the reflection of the fires. And then it started pouring down rain. And it had been raining intermittently throughout the week. But right there in the middle of training, pouring down rain. Oh man, I'm still tired from this freaking travel. It took me 19 hours both ways just to get from Tennessee to here. So, a lot of training. I think everybody who came through did fantastic, by the way. We didn't have anyone leave with questions. We never have, and that's always good. Everybody pretty much leaves feeling more confident. So, for any of you guys who are alumni, you've been to the training before, like Kevin and Carrie. This is their second time coming to this training. If you came to some of the older stuff and we didn't have the shoot house, the wooden shoot house up, come and check out what we're doing now. And you guys are just going to flip out. For any of you other guys who've never come to see the training before, come out, come and get tested. We had two Marines out there. Very, very good compliment for Justin and I is that they said, if the Marine Corps would train us the way you guys trained us this weekend, not only do I think more people would actually want to learn, but more people would want to re-enlist to continue that training. And that was a huge compliment from Marine to two other Marines. So yeah, that was great. That was a good compliment. I think that the fact that we are always positive, we use positive encouragement. We don't yell at people. We don't demean you. We don't say stupid things to you and make you feel dumb or little. We're not about that. How does that help out anybody? So I made it a point whenever I began doing this training, all thanks to Bob Griswold, by the way, he's the one who convinced me to start doing this. My whole point was to never have hazing, yelling, or an uninvitable atmosphere, because we're all Christians. We're here to fellowship. I'll preach at you a little bit, like what I did Saturday. Was able to preach a sermon, so praise God for that. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But, you know, it's fellowshipping. It's getting to know people, getting to know new people, being around good people. One of our Marine brothers that was out there, Max, good guy, very good guy. Max and I were able to get away a couple times from the crowds and talk about the Lord. You know, Max is kind of fresh out of the Marine Corps, needing new direction, needing to be around better men, wanting to know more about Christ. And I was glad to give it to him. And since then, I'll have you know that Max is now reading his Bible. And I hope, brother, that you're sleeping better at night, because I know the problems you got. I've had them too, and I shared them with you. And you're not the only one to deal with the problems that you were dealing with, but you got a whole family that is backed behind you. Everybody that's here in Wrecker Nation, everybody here that listens to the American Vindictive Podcast, we'll pray for you. So if you guys can, lift up Max in your prayers, dear brother of ours, and we'll see you again. We will see you soon, Max. So one of the things that I preached about was disobedient children, disobedient men. What happens when men deny the rod of discipline in their lives? Obviously, it's the Lord who disciplines us, who chastises us because he loves us. What happens to those men who ignore the chastising of the Father? What kind of men do they become? What kind of actions can they commit? What kind of history do they leave behind them in their wake? What kind of nations are built by godless men? Alexander the Great was a godless man, though he worshiped false gods, foreign gods. He was predicted in the Bible to pass through Jerusalem. Now, he had conquered most of what was called the known world at that point, and yet still, he passed on. And I couldn't tell you where he is today. Probably not going to be with us in heaven. One of the greatest generals, greatest commanders the world has ever known. He's as worthless as dust now. And I think about this in my own actions, especially with my own children. Do my actions mean anything to my children? And I'll say this for a lot of you who came to the training this weekend. Here's a training point. When you come through a house, I told you how to speak to people. I taught you how to use your voice as a weapon and give commands to people. Have command presence when you come in. Be believable. The criminal's not going to believe you if you're shaking and you're nervous and your voice is breaking and squeaking. And I told you, don't say I'm going to shoot you 20 times in a row, because after the first time, they probably don't believe you. And if a criminal doesn't believe you, then they're going to continue to get closer and closer and closer to you, or they're going to continue to provoke you, not obey your commands. You have to be believable. So parents, and to the rest of us in society, when we warn someone, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, when we keep saying don't do that and we never bring down the rod, well, you're giving these people a learned behavior trait. I can do what I want to, and there's no recompense for it. so I can get away with murder if need be, if the only thing I'm going to ever be told is don't do that. Likewise, with disobedient men, especially disobedient men who are in charge of nations, once they start to commit atrocities and the people do nothing about it. I'm gonna tell you something that'll be controversial to some of you. And me and Jamie Walden were talking about this, and he actually agrees. When you are given the ability as a human being, especially as a man, defender, when you are given the ability to defend and you don't, and you say, oh, Lord, take care of it, take care of that one. Unless you're meaning spiritually, or unless you are so close with God, that fire will fall down from the heaven like Elijah. You're going to be shocked when nothing happens. I don't need to be told any phenomenal stories. I'm sure everybody has one. But from what I've seen in reality, you were given the ability to speak. You were given the ability to reason. And you were given the ability to act. God expects you to do it. Do it with Christ on your heart and in your mind, though, so you don't become a heathen in your actions. But let's look at Hitler for a second. Imagine the world where Adolf Hitler was assassinated and killed by his military. And it did attempt to happen on multiple venues. They were never successful, but it did attempt to happen. But it was always a few. It was always a few. Imagine if the actual Wehrmacht, the entire German military said, listen, we're not all about to get our houses destroyed and lives ended because of one guy wants to go on a worldwide rampage. And he's killing our neighbors. He's killing the kids that my kids grew up playing with. Never had a problem really with these people until he came around and told me I had a problem with them. Even though there was a basis already since the 1880s in Germany for a dislikement of the Jewish people and those kind of social economic kind of things. But never to the extent of all out Holocaust genocide. Just imagine this man who was spared the rod of discipline from his own commanders, from his own people. Look at what he got away with. Now, that's a man who was not of God, and look what he got away with. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So, if you are a man of God and you are given a kingdom and you do wrong, you do like David did, killing Uriah. You do like Saul did. You do like any of these other leaders, and you go against God, you pray to other gods, you fornicate the title that you've got, God's going to come down upon you with a rod of discipline. And it's never good for you. It's never good for your family. I mean, you typically aren't the only one who gets affected, right? Even if you are the one who gets affected, then it still cascades down to your family now has to witness this or deal with you. But what I see here in America is we have a Joe Biden and a Hunter Biden. We have a Congress. And we have all these others. We have all these others in America with positions of power, and they abuse that power and abuse that power and abuse that power. And we, the people who have all the power, continue to give it to them. And then they use that power against us. And we sit back and we go, well, gee, that's not fair. God, why don't you do something about it? Well, why don't you do something about it? You were given the task and the ability as we, the people. Why don't we do something about it? I will warn you, though, the moment you go down this act of defiance, defying your own kingdom, the moment civil unrest starts, turns into civil war, and then all-out rebellion, you better be ready to go all the way through with that action. I'm saying all this because I've been saying since I've been talking on the radio, civil war is coming to America. We can all see it. Doug's not special. We can all see it. It's going to happen. 2024 appears to be the intended target for this. Appears to be. There's two movies that have just recently came out. One Barack Obama made, or more or less cyber attack. Don't trust white people. There, you've seen the movie. The other is actually titled Civil War, and the forces of Texas and California unite. Now you know we're in some fiction. And then attack Washington, D.C. And in that, the American government is bombing American cities. I know it's science fiction. I know it's fun to have these Civil War conversations. But if you want to look at the way Civil War has gone wrong, look at France. Look at what's happened now throughout Africa and their civil conflicts, like South Africa. It is brutal. People are brutal. I can't remember the name of the way they make this device, but they call it like the necklace or whatever in South Africa. Take a tire. I guess they bound your hands to like a pole or something. They take a tire, fill it with gasoline, put it over your head, and then they light it on fire. People do the most heinous things to each other in the name of politics. And it's going to happen in America, and you better freaking be ready for it. I'm not worried about giants. I'm not worried about monsters. I'm not worried about aliens. Not worrying about those things. I'm worried about my neighbor down the road who's lost his or her mind, or the group of people who are coming through the forest or down the road who are going to go house to house and either kill everybody in sight and take your goods. I've met those people in Bandera, Texas. I know plenty of the marshals who arrested the entire compound of these people. They actually had an announcement on Facebook called the Marauders. When like prophecy hits the fan, if you don't join them, they're coming to take all your stuff. These are real people that are out there. And so that's who I prepare for. I don't teach people how to be militia. I could care less about that at this rate. I'm not going to teach you how to be special forces. Couldn't if I wanted to. And 3 days, 4 days of training is not going to turn you into Superman. What I do is I try to give people the practical skills to build upon, as I told everybody this week, to build upon these skills so that you can take the little bit of training and scenario training that you did with us. You can go and take basic fundamentals of marksmanship, learn how to be a more precise shooter. Go out to these three gun ranges, start shooting with those guys. My Lord, they're a fantastic group of people to learn how to shoot accurately and quickly with. From there, take a long range course. Take a scout sniper course taught by some guy. Take courses that make sense. That make sense to what you are going to do. If you are old and your knees are beaten up, are you going to go out and do all this heroic, CQB stuff? No, but you may get up in the middle of the night and go, get a glass of water or something, and somebody be breaking into your house, and now CQB has erupted out of nowhere. That's why CQB makes the most sense for people to get training for. From there, BMI, Basic Fundamentals of Marksmanship, basic medical course, some sort of a long-range course, ham radio courses. Be practical. people. Be practical with how you train and buy good equipment. If you're buying all your stuff from Amazon, unless it's high quality, if you're just buying the cheapest stuff that China makes, it's going to fail the first time it's tested. This single thread sewing stuff is the moment someone pulls on it because they got shot and they're clinging onto you while you're dragging them out of the house and you rip their vest apart, their clothes apart. Well, I hope you got more than just that. That's what I'm saying. Buy quality equipment, buy quality gear. A lot of people showed up a ton of different firearms this weekend. Look, guys, I'm going to set you straight. A Glock 19. Get some sort of a semi-automatic, mid-size, or full-size pistol and get used to shooting it. And make sure you keep a lot of magazines on you because you're going to go through a lot of magazines in any type of firefight. If you only carry one mag with you and that's in the pistol, and anything happens to that magazine, what you going to put in your pistol now? Somebody else's magazine? In the middle of getting into one of these simulated gunfights with Uncle Charlie, one of the students that was there, her gun kept going down and kept going down and kept going down. So Justin handed her his gun so that she could shoot him and finish the scenario. Pray you get a bad guy that'll say, "Oh, I see your gun's not working. Here, take mine." That's not real life. But I will tell you this. We had a blast. We got to fellowship this week. We had Bob Griswold's. We had his funeral Monday. I was honored to be a pallbearer for it. Bob was a very good friend of mine, as you all know. A very wise man. He was a big brother to me. Coached me on quite a few things. He's an extraordinarily generous man. When he gave, he genuinely gave from his heart. Everywhere we went, he always talked about the Lord and what the Lord had done on his life. He loved his wife, Roxanne, intensely. He loved his children. And he always wanted to be a good example for the average civilian. And I believe he was. I believe he touched a lot of people's lives. I believe that he was, you know, probably one of the best men I've got to know in my life since doing this and really get to know. Because I never really get to know people in my old job. And so now I consider it a pleasure that I was able to know Bob. And there'll never be another Bob Griswold. They'll never be there. I won't tell any of the stories that he told me about overseas, you know, here online. But anyone in the next class, you ever want to hear a good Bob Griswold overseas story, I could tell you a few of them. Some of them are absolutely hilarious. Some of them are downright scary. So, yeah, guys, I think that this whole Civil War movie stuff that's going on, it's foreshadowing for what's coming. It's foreshadowing. I don't think the end is coming yet. A lot of people are in a lot of different places spiritually, mentally right now. I'll tell you the way Doug does this. Maybe this will help some of you out there. Every day, without fail, I read from Scripture. This is how I guide my life. I guide my wife. I guide my children. It's through Scripture. If you don't know how to read, start with the New Testament. Do a chapter a day. Read a psalm or two every day. If you can stand to read a little bit more, find something out of Old Testament and just keep reading, keep reading, keep reading until you consume the book. David Wilkerson's, where do I got it? David Wilkerson, if you go to Amazon Prime or whatever and order his daily devotional, it has truly blessed my life and helped my life, and especially with the way that I read my Bible. So, you know, just don't forget these simple things, guys. Take this day by day. People are getting all kind of spun up about World War III and Civil War and the Antichrist. And look, maybe those things are happening. But you still have to deal with your marital problems. You still have to deal with your children, fathers. This is my final advice for you guys. Love your wives intensely. Love them intensely. That's your best friend. That is your battle buddy. So every day, take that intimate time and love one another. With your children, gentlemen, stop ignoring your children. If you are a grown man and you are playing video games and you haven't played with your kids, read to your kids, looked over your kids, hell, had the kids help clean the house up with you, sat down, watch a movie with them, go outside and walk with them. If you more or less have kids and your dog gets pet more than you play with your kids, you are wrong. You need to take that video game, that TV, that computer, your phone, whatever it is that is turning you into a, I would tell you a bad father, but a father that's not truly there, and you need to put it in a room, put it in a closet. If you just have to, throw the dang thing away. It's not helping you. It's a distraction device. Fathers, you are the ones who should be disciplining your children. So discipline them. When you raise your children up in a godly way and they step out of line, there's grace for that. But if they continuously do it, grace has to be met with the rod. If you spare the rod, spoil the child, you did that. That was your action as a parent. If you apply the rod correctly with love, it'll hurt. It'll hurt you. It'll hurt the child a little bit. I'm not saying beat them with a rod, gentlemen. But if you don't spank your kids when you should, you don't put them in the corner, you don't take their stuff away from them, you just let them walk all over your wife, walk all over you, and expect a very bad teenage years. You got to get a hold of it then. Because look at what's going on with all these Karens in the world right now on all these kids that are so confused. Their parents aren't in their life. And apparently the ones that are not doing much with them, ignoring them. The kids have just become more or less an ornament to hang off them at a family function. Don't be that guy. Be the leader. Be the alpha of your house. Be the king of your tribe. Open up the conduit between you and the Lord and keep the information flowing. That's the prayers. Keep it flowing. I see too many men who stand on the wayside and they allow their family to just deteriorate underneath them. And then they step back with their beer and they go, man, I just don't know what's going on. Maybe the problem starts with you. Men, fix your problems first. Dig your well for your family first. Don't worry about your friends' problems. Don't try and counsel nobody if you got a bunch of problems too. Get close with the Lord. Times are getting scarce. I know, you know, everybody's, what's today's December 14th. There's that whole fear of the bond market falling out and affecting the American dollar. A lot of things are going to happen. Christ told you a lot of things are going to happen. You have wars, rumors of wars. You have earthquakes in diverse places. You have famine and plagues and pestilence. And a man's household will become his own enemies. You have ethnicity versus ethnicity. The world is going to reel and rock like a drunk man. They said two things at the beginning and at the end. First, he said, do not be deceived. Do not be in fear. Do not be deceived. Don't be led astray. That happens when you're reading your Bible. You cannot fall into deception if you are praying and reading your Bible. You will fall into deception if you pray and read your Bible and you're guided by some lunatic on YouTube. Well, today's book of Flat Earth tells us, get out of that crap. Get out of that crap. For all you flat earthers, I know you hate me. Whatever. Jesus loves you. You're going to be led astray. And eventually, you're going to get so far down that road. Let's say I'm wrong, okay? And you eventually get up to heaven. You pass the firmament. And you look down and you laugh. Ah, the world is just a big old quarter and we're all sitting on it. What you need to worry about is, though you may have your own personal beliefs, if you preach the gospel and you lead people astray, you will have to account for that. So whatever your personal beliefs are, I don't care. But for a lot of these guys, they talk a lot about the Bible, then they talk about whatever their crazy conspiracy is, and they only use the Bible to affirm their crazy conspiracy. What I'm saying is stay away from those people. That's a Jim Jones-like figure who's just waiting for more people to come and drink the Kool-Aid with them. Stay away from those people, all right? Now, for all you flat earthers, I did not just call you Jim Jones, but you know those within your own group. You know those within your own group. Look, I got plenty of friends who are flat earthers. We never really even have an argument. And actually, a lot of them agree with me. It's not that the conspiracy is what I have a problem with. It's the militancy of your conspiracy. I'm all about Christ and saving men's souls. I could care less if I do that on whatever ground I'm standing on. So, man, get your head out of the sand. Get back to being the leader of your family. Women, support your man. Keep them in line, though. Keep them in line with the Bible. That means women, get off your freaking phone and get out of the freaking mirror. Be a mama. Cook. Clean. Take after those children. That's the nurturing side of you. You need to have that. If you're all about being Miss Business Class Woman, I don't have time to nurture my children. You're going to be sadly mistaken one day when you deny your children your affection. Guys, that's all I got. Stay frosty. See you tomorrow. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.